Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. ESG, or Environmental, Social, Governance, promises to help the bottom line and the planet at the same time. Is it too good to be true? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of an episode digging into that very question.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Iran and impeachment. Those are the two dominating issues ahead of us this week. A massive funeral in Tehran, bellicose talk from Iran and the U.S., where President Trump says he won't be afraid to strike hard if necessary. Allies in Iraq and Europe and the Middle East are all trying to cope with this huge disruption, and Congress now balancing the specter of war and the next chapter in the impeachment of President Trump as it continues to unfold on Capitol Hill. So this hour on Point, what will this week bring us? And you can join us. How are you feeling today, this Monday? Confused? Scared? Perhaps elated by the killing of Iran's General Soleimani? What about the impeachment? What do you want the next steps to be? What do you think they will be? Join us anytime on Twitter and Facebook. At On Point Radio, we've got a terrific panel to help walk us through what to expect this week. Joining me from Washington is Anna Edgerton, national and Congress editor for Bloomberg News. Anna, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Gideon Rose also joins us. He's in New York. He's editor of Foreign Affairs Magazine. He was associate director for Near East and South Asian Affairs on the staff of the National Security Council. Gideon, welcome to you.
Hi, Meghna.
And Darlene Superville joins us from Washington as well. She's White House correspondent for the Associated Press. Darlene, welcome.
Hi, great to be with you.
All right. Well, first of all, let's listen to a little bit of the sound coming from Tehran today, where General Qasem Soleimani was buried in a massive funeral gathering. In this bit of tape, you're going to hear mourners chanting. You will hear Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, praying and weeping over the general's body. And finally, you will hear Soleimani's daughter vowing revenge on the United States.
Hey, U.S., you stop him!
Alhamdulillah, alladhi akram al-mustashhadin fi sabilih. الحمد لله الذي رزقنا الشهادة في سبيله
خانواده های سربازان آمریکایی در غرب آسیا که شاهد ذلت آمریکا.
Sounds today from Tehran. Gideon, let me start with you. What do you make of the massive demonstration, the funeral, and the language coming out of Tehran today?
Well, this is sort of what you would expect because Soleimani was a major figure in not just Iranian politics and the national security establishment, but in the general cultural consciousness. He was the leader of Iran's paramilitary and military forces outside Iran, the regional projection of Iran. And so he was a popular hero in the region and a popular enemy for Iran's enemies. And it's not surprising that assassinating someone like this would basically produce a very major reaction in the short term like this. Popularly, we don't know what the longer term strategic response is going to be. And that's what everybody is basically holding their breath and trying to figure out what's going to happen next.
And Anna, follow up on that, because while I take Gideon's point that we don't know exactly what the longer term strategic response would be, we are hearing language out of Tehran about the possibility of Iran retaliating in a whole variety of ways. How seriously should we take the language we're hearing today?
Well, the language is one thing, and of course, we'll see over the next few weeks and months what the actual actions are. But there is a lot of concern in Washington, and especially in Congress, even among some Republican lawmakers, about just how well thought out this strike was, and whether or not the Trump administration really thought through all of the possible consequences and possible ways that Iran could retaliate. So we will see, especially as Congress gets back today and tomorrow, some of the concerns from lawmakers about exactly where this is going to take us in our relations, not just with Iran, but also with other countries in the Middle East. Mm.
Well, tell me a little bit more. I mean, who have you heard from so far expressing these concerns?
Well, certainly Democrats, and especially House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, has said that, you know, she was not satisfied by the justification that the Trump administration gave for this strike. And then we've also seen some Republicans, including Rand Paul, a senator who is going to be the most likely Republican to push back against military action, just trying to question whether or not this was actually the best step to take. You know, it could be interpreted in Iran as an act of war. So if Congress did not explicitly authorize that act of war, that brings up the whole balance of powers that question that we've heard before, not just with this administration, but with previous administrations as well.
Mm. Well, Darlene Superville, what have you been hearing in the past couple of days from the White House that helps us understand where we are here today on a Monday?
Well, what you've heard from the White House is basically continuing a strong defense of the decision the president took to take out Soleimani. And that's what you're going to continue to hear this week, despite what Anna just talked about, the blowback from Congress and mostly from Democrats about the timing and the reasoning and the intelligence behind the attack. So I think this week will just bring more drilling down on the part of the president. And Secretary of State Pompeo, for example, mm-hmm. and other top national security officials about why they did this, why they felt the need to do this at this time.
Well, Gideon, I mean, I think we've heard everyone here right now has rightly raised the most important question about what do we know about the why? We've heard sort of different things here and there from various members of the administration over the past couple of days. I mean, can we distill the most clear and direct reasoning about why now?
Well, I don't think anybody takes this administration's public statement seriously as a guide to policy. And the problem is that because they make them all the time and they all say different things. And then one of them turns out to be true later. And they point to that as a promise kept or a statement followed. But realistically, you can't – there's no forward guidance because everything this administration does is the choice of one man who's a very impulsive actor. And this seems to be yet another example of that. The same set of – The United States and Iran have been engaged in a low to medium grade tit for tat over the last couple of years, ever since the Trump administration withdrew from the Iranian nuclear accord that the Obama administration and other countries had negotiated and basically put pressure on Iran and sanctions. And the Iranians have started to fight back. They basically sent a whole series of different minor attacks, and including an attack on the Saudi oil fields, which the United States didn't respond to in the fall. And then most recently, there was an attack by Iranian proxies, Shiite militias, on U.S. facilities in Iraq. Mm. And this is what the administration was responding to. They got a list of options for the tit-for-tat back and forth that they've been engaged in. And Trump, apparently annoyed at having looked weak in the past, chose the extreme option because that was the most extreme option presented and basically didn't have any plan for what was going to happen next. Now, the question from what happens here is really interesting. The administration hopes, that the Iranians, having gotten a slap in the face like a dog with a rolled up newspaper, will back down and either come groveling back to the table or at least just be quiescent. Very few other people think that will happen. There's a possibility if you had a Kissinger or a Bismarck doing this for a great diplomatic coup de main in which you'd follow up your strike with a diplomatic initiative saying, here, now let's go back to the deal table and try to get, let's say, NAFTA 2, but for the Iran deal 2. The problem is, at this point, that's probably not in the cards, even if they wanted to pull off another deal, use the strike as leverage for diplomatic negotiations. It's a clever idea, but there's no evidence that they're actually going to do that or that it would work if they tried.
Right. And who the president does have is, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, as you've all noted before, a supreme Iran hawk for years and until he ushered John Bolton out. He had also Iran hawk John Bolton as national security advisor. So,
but that's the thing. They're advisors of the advisors, and what's constant is Trump. And so Trump has shown true impulsiveness. Nixon used to talk about a crazy man theory in which nobody knew what Nixon would do, and that was good leverage because everyone was scared of him. Trump actually is the somewhat erratic president that Nixon wanted to seem but never actually was. So right now, everybody is treating Trump like the, like OJ in the white Bronco. This is a major escalation. Nobody knows what's going to happen next. It's possible the Iranians will strike back, but almost certain the Iranians will strike back in some way, but it probably will take weeks or months or even years. Gaddafi struck back at an airstrike with the Lockerbie bombings in 1988 for an airstrike years earlier. There could be terrorist operations that are set in motion by this as revenge that we won't know about for years to come. Or there could be something near term in the next few weeks at an American outpost somewhere in the Middle East. Or, more likely, you've already seen the Iran nuclear deal continue to unravel. Iran has responded by saying, okay, you want to pull out of the deal? Fine. We're going to pull out too, and we're going to go back to doing our nuclear program. What is your response going to be? So this is a path towards future conflict at the very least, and we don't know what kind.
Well, as you were mentioning, in an ideal world, if an escalation is going to happen, there is a diplomatic follow-up or at the very least sort of a unity amongst allies here. And I want to just play a moment from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on Fox News just yesterday. Pompeo saying the response from European allies to the killing of Iranian General Soleimani, that the Europeans' response has not been helpful.
I spent the last day and a half, 2 days, talking to partners in the region, sharing with them what we were doing, why we were doing it, seeking their assistance. They've all been fantastic. And then talking to our partners in other places that haven't been quite as good. Frankly, the Europeans haven't been as helpful as I wish that they could be. The Brits, the French, the Germans all need to understand that what we did, what the Americans did, saved lives in Europe as well.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on Fox News yesterday. Anna Edgerton, I mean, do you see the diplomatic apparatus in place in the United States to bring European allies around in this moment?
No, and this is definitely one of the moments where you see how we have not really built a coalition for the action that we take in the Middle East, as we've seen elsewhere in the world and other engagements. And, you know, when Mike Pompeo says this could have saved European lives, I don't think any European powers actually believe that. In fact, they're probably concerned about exactly the opposite, that this strike taken unilaterally by the United States in Iraq against a very prominent Iranian will actually endanger European soldiers, diplomats, journalists, people working and living in the Middle East and elsewhere around the world. So there's certainly a cause for concern there. And also, like Gideon mentioned, the JCPOA, the nuclear Iran deal, is going to face a much tougher path forward.
Well, we have to take a quick break. We're talking with Anna Edgerton, Gideon Rose, and Darlene Superville about both Iran and impeachment. It's going to be another big and extremely important week in the news. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. A recent episode featured a debate about ESG, or environmental social governance.
This sounds like more work than just putting your money into a social impact fund.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks there's an easy solution here is either engaged in puffery, greenwash, or deceiving themselves.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about what to expect in the week ahead in the news, of course, focused on Iran and impeachment. I'm joined today by Anna Edgerton. She's national and Congress editor for Bloomberg News. Gideon Rose joins us. He's editor of Foreign Affairs magazine. And Darlene Superville is also with us. She's White House correspondent for the Associated Press. And let's listen to a little bit of some reaction from various parts of the political establishment in Washington. Here is Senator Elizabeth Warren, also obviously Democratic candidate for president. She was on CNN yesterday saying that the timing of the killing of General Soleimani suggested in her mind that there was some pre-election, quote, wag the dog purpose to it.
I think people are reasonably asking about the timing and why it is that the administration seems to have all kinds of different answers. In the first 48 hours after this attack, what did we hear? Well, we heard it was for an imminent attack. Then we heard, no, it was to prevent any kind of future attack. Then we heard from the vice president himself, no, it was related to 9/11.
That was Senator Elizabeth Warren on CNN yesterday. Here's Republican Senator Lindsey Graham on Fox News yesterday, saying that the assassination of Soleimani opens up an opportunity for diplomacy.
Here's what I think would serve the world well. If President Trump laid out what he wants Iran to do to relieve sanctions. I think this has been done before, but now's the time for the president to tell the world what we would like Iran to do to get back to a normal relationship.
Senator Lindsey Graham on Fox News yesterday. Darlene Superville, is there any possibility, any inkling from the White House that the president might follow Senator Graham's advice there, saying this is a potential moment for diplomacy?
Well, before this strike, the President Trump had said on numerous occasions, and some of his other top aides had said, that he was willing, he would be willing to meet with top Iranian officials, President Rouhani, with no preconditions to negotiate some sort of deal. I have to think that offer is still on the table, but I don't see how Iran would be in any sort of mood to reciprocate at this point after we've just taken out their top military official. So it will be interesting to watch over the next few weeks and months, you know, the end of the Trump administration, this final year of the administration, where the two sides can come together, if they can come together at all, given the events of the past couple of days.
Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Detroit. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, how's everybody doing today?
Okay, I guess, Mike. Go ahead.
I wanted to stress some very important things. I'm actually a veteran of Afghanistan, and from what the release of the Afghanistan papers and our the amount of money we've spent in the trillions of dollars, the amount of lives that have been lost, both American and innocent, throughout the region, any type of conflict that'll stretch into us inevitably invading Iran is completely pointless. There is no benefit to us in any regard, and it's just going to end up as another regime change war. This is exactly what Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard has been speaking against, and former Congressman Ron Paul, and they have been ignored on this issue, and we have nothing of benefit to show for all of the years, all the trillions of dollars, and all of the lives lost.
Mike, thank you so much for your call. Gideon, you want to respond to Mike?
Sure. So that is a very good expression of exactly the kind of feeling that candidate Trump often expressed and that President Trump himself often addresses when you get himself talking, you know, honestly. And this strike on Soleimani seemed to be a major pivot in the opposite direction. A re-engagement in the region, a major blow that could lead to future blows. And that's what everybody's being sort of shocked and surprised about, why John Bolton is suddenly happy with the president, why the caller is suddenly unhappy. What's interesting is there's a theory that by which you could imagine this all working to continue withdrawal, which is this could be, and I wouldn't put it past our president, this could be essentially a covering action in which, or conceived that way, in which we basically do a major strike, hit the Iranians, allows the president to crow that he's done something major, and then continue to gradually pull out from the region, accepting or stomaching the minor attacks that come later, not really responding more, and in effect using this as a covering action to continue the American withdrawal from the Persian Gulf. That would be a kind of clever move. But we just don't know at this point, because clearly this administration is not thinking long term about this policy. They've unleashed a can of worms, and now everybody will see what happens. The United States is still far and away the strongest player in the region, and everybody is very scared of us. But if you continue to act really stupidly, then even weaker players, if they're smart, can take advantage of the operation and do something. So we'll see what happens.
So that might be a game of four-dimensional chess here that you're laying out in front of us, Gideon. But we have right now the Iraqis saying that they want to expel U.S. troops from Iraq, and the president being quite furious about that, saying he could slap sanctions on Iraq for doing so. So how does that fit into the slow sort of cover for the continual withdrawal of American troops from the region?
Because 2 days from now, the president will be happily saying the exact opposite with just as much vociferousness and saying, I always wanted to get out of Iraq. I never wanted to get in the first place. So I don't think that the president, despite what the president just said about his tweets being sufficient ratification for notes to Congress for a war authorization. I don't, you know, right now we are in the situation we've dreaded for the last several years. What happens when a real international crisis intersects with the keeping up with Kardashian goes to Washington version of this presidency? The New York Times today talked about the decisions he was making when he was talking about threatening to bomb cultural sites, which is an international war crime and terrorism, essentially. And here's what the time, here's the setting. As the president spoke, six advisors crowded to the side of Mr. Trump's desk in the cabin near the doorway. Robert O'Brien, his national security advisor, Jared Kushner, his son-in-law and senior advisor, Ivanka Trump, his daughter and senior advisor, Mick Mulvaney, the acting White House chief of staff, Hogan Gridley, a deputy press secretary, and Dan Scavino, the White House social media director. The president had a football game on the television. So you have a real discussion of foreign policy being handled as a reality TV show with the family around saying, what should we do next? I'm not sure what Chloe's views on Iran are, or Kim, or maybe Kylie would have an opinion on whether we should strike or not. But I really don't care what Ivanka Trump thinks either.
Anna, you want to comment on that?
I'm just impressed that Gideon can list all of the Kardashians. I'm not sure I could do that. And that's an excellent point, that consistency is not something that we have come to expect from this president. And even as a candidate, you know, while he was saying that he wanted to draw U.S. troops out of the Middle East, he also said he wanted to carpet bomb parts of the Middle East. And so, you know, he's kind of tried to play this dual, tough guy, but more isolationist president. And, you know, he did that as a candidate. And now we're kind of seeing him trying to do both as a president, and that doesn't necessarily work on the international stage because it confuses our allies, it confuses our adversaries, and it really kind of unsettles the situation where, you know, even if you have this aggressive strike, it's hard to follow up with diplomacy because no one actually believes him or believes his administration.
Well, on the point of the talk about bombing cultural sites, here's Secretary of State Mike Pompeo again. He was on CNN's Jake Tapper, or with Jake Tapper, yesterday, and Tapper really tried to get Pompeo to answer the question about the president's threat to attack Iranian cultural sites. The Secretary of State repeatedly avoided trying to answer that question, but this is as close as he got.
The American people should know that we will not waver. We will be bold in protecting American interests, and we'll do so in a way that's consistent with the rule of law. We've always done that, Jake, and President Trump's tweet doesn't deviate from that one iota.
So cultural centers are theoretically fair targets in your view?
Jake, we're going to do the things that are right and the things that are consistent with American law.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on CNN yesterday. Let's go to David, who's calling from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. You're on the air, David.
Hi. I think to start with, if you look at the fact that Trump is completely ignorant to and indifferent to politics in general, and you go back to 2011 where he claimed that Obama would start a war with Iran to get reelected, I mean, this is a call straight from Trump's own playbook. In his tiny mind, he can avoid his impeachment and everything by getting this, you know, mirror over here. And he doesn't care about the consequences to America. I mean, the consequences are going to be huge. We've had eyes on Soleimani for 3 years while he committed murders. And why now? Why all of a sudden is it important to take him out? You know, this is completely absurd. And I think that the Republican Congress owns this. And all those pandering like Pompeo, who is so discredited that he's acting like he'll find out about a phone call that he was actually on. I mean, it's absurd the way that this president is being pandered to, and it's going to cost American lives big time.
Well, David, thank you so much for your call. And David, they're referring to a November 2011 tweet in which the president, or then citizen Donald Trump, said about President Obama that Obama will start a war with Iran because he has absolutely no ability to negotiate. He's weak and he's ineffective. We have a real problem in the White House. Let's go to Dan, who's calling from Hanover, New Hampshire. Dan, you're on the air.
Hi, how you guys doing?
All right, what's your thought?
So, you know, I'm only like 22, so I grew up with all this stuff happening around me. But the one thing I've noticed is these countries, Saudi Arabia, Iran, they always say, you know, we're not terrorist supporters, we don't support terrorism. But they also say that we don't really have a grip on our country. And, you know, it's happening and it's kind of like we can't control it. And I don't, you know, in my opinion, man, it's like, honestly, if you're rubbing, you know, shoulders with terrorists and you're killing your own people and I mean, if this was anyone but Trump, we would have been fine with it just on the humanitarian effort. But, you know, because people get so bipartisan, they don't see the fact this was an evil man who's done lots of evil things. And, yeah, it might have not been the right time, but it also might have been the only time. And in my opinion, it's just like if a country's going to say, listen, we don't have full control of the country and we're not supporting terrorists, but they're in, like, if we said that and then we had a terrorist cell in New York that bombed Paris, Paris would be like, well, we don't really care if you can't control it because it's coming from your backyard.
Mm. Well, Dan, thank you so much for your call. Darlene, what do you think about Dan's question about this might not have been the best time, but it might have been the only time?
Well, that the question of why will be the dominant question this week, among the dominant questions, if not the dominant question this week. The clip that you played of Senator Elizabeth Warren raising that question, there are other Democrats who've raised the same question about timing. And the administration so far has not really come out and explained the why. We had references from the president himself and also Secretary of State Pompeo to this imminent threat that they said Soleimani presented, that he was planning some sort of attack. The war powers information the administration sent up to Congress over the weekend has been totally classified. There's no public version of that that's been released. And so until the administration has also promised lawmakers a briefing this week to give more explanation for why it did what it did. So that is a big question as we head into this week.
Mm. Well, Anna, let's focus in on Congress's role here because it's a big one, a potentially big one, and there's a lot going on in Congress. I mean, we've seen that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is saying that the House is likely to vote on a war powers resolution this week. So tell us more about that.
Yeah, she sent a letter to her colleagues last night saying that they do plan to vote this week on a war powers resolution to limit Trump's military actions regarding Iran. Now, a similar proposal was also included in the House version of the defense policy bill, the NDAA, but that was later stripped out in a compromised version with the Senate. So this has been proposed before, and Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia, a Democrat, also introduced a similar war powers resolution in the Senate. So this is just gives Democrats a formal mechanism to say, we disapprove of this. We're trying to exert the war powers that the Constitution gives to Congress, that if you want to begin a new conflict, you know, essentially a new conflict with Iran, you have to come to Congress and explain why and get due authorization. So there's kind of an interesting coalition that could get behind this. There are a few Republicans like Rand Paul, as I mentioned before, and Matt Gaetz, who has been a Florida representative, a Republican, who's a very close ally of President Trump's, but also has joined with Ro Khanna, one of the most progressive representatives from California, to sponsor this war powers resolution. So I don't think we'll see very many Republicans supporting this, but it will put pressure on those who have said they want to defend the powers that the Constitution gives to Congress to make sure that they, you know, are either justifying Trump's actions or sticking to what they said about the powers that Congress should have.
Well, you mentioned Senator Tim Kaine, Democrat of Virginia. So here he is in an interview with MSNBC's Andrea Mitchell on Friday talking about the war powers resolution that he is sponsoring in the Senate.
Today, I'm going to take the one step that I have available to me. I will file a resolution pursuant to the War Powers Act of 1974 to try to force Congress to have a debate about whether or not it is in the United States' interest to be at war with Iran. I don't think it is. Some of my colleagues may think otherwise, but we can't let the president make this decision on his own.
Senator Tim Kaine on Friday there. But Gideon, as you know, the president himself has tweeted very recently, quote, these media posts will serve as notification to the United States Congress that should Iran strike any U.S. person or target, the United States will quickly and fully strike back and perhaps in a disproportionate manner. Such legal notice is not required, but given nevertheless through Twitter. Gideon, what do you think?
So Tim Kaine's a decent man, an honorable man, a serious policymaker, an official, a government official. He's also a refugee from the past, a time when things made sense, when we purported to actually talk about national security as if it were more than just a branch of domestic partisan politics and actually had a concern for the actual subject matter involved. These days, the number of people in Congress who actually think that way or are prepared to act on it is really minuscule, which is why even as he acknowledges, this is not going to go anywhere. So to your question, I don't know. Everything in Washington these days is political. The irony is the only people who will get us out of this crisis without war are the very kinds of quote-unquote deep state officials, the professionals in the military, intelligence, and diplomatic corps who are the ones testifying against the Trump administration in Congress and being attacked by the president on Twitter.
Well, we are talking about another big week in the news, a major one, in fact, Iran and impeachment on everyone's minds. We're joined today by Gideon Rose, Anna Edgerton, Darlene Superville as well, and we'll take a lot more calls when we come back. We want to hear from you. What's your reaction to the president's, what he said on Twitter or on television about his position on Iran? What are you thinking when you see that huge funeral happening in Tehran today, and how much do you think this is related to the ongoing steps for impeachment in Congress? This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, On Point listeners. I'm poet and author Xinyi Pai. As you celebrate Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, I invite you to listen to the 10,000 Things podcast from KUOW and the NPR Network. 10,000 Things is a podcast about modern artifacts of Asian American life, ordinary objects that tell extraordinary stories and reveal something profound about the experience of being Asian in America. Find 10,000 Things from KUOW and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about what to expect in the week ahead in the news today. We're joined by Anna Edgerton. She's national and Congress editor for Bloomberg News. Gideon Rose is with us. He's editor of Foreign Affairs Magazine. And Darlene Superville is with us as well. She's White House correspondent for the Associated Press. And we're getting a lot of comments coming in here online. Stephen Pappas says, I'm curious how the attack in Iran on Iran will impact potential peace talks that have been reportedly in the works with the Taliban. How can the Taliban and even the Afghanistani government trust the United States when we are now randomly assassinating foreign leaders? And actually, Gideon, I was wondering if you had a thought about that, since there are lines of connections to be drawn all across the region.
So this is actually a really great question that nobody really knows the answer to, because you can make an argument that everything is connected, and so one thing here affects your credibility there. But there's also a lot of good reason to believe that each set of players in the individual conflicts look to their own individual conflict and look to what you're doing in that. So I don't actually think this may help improve the United States' reputation for being an erratic actor willing to take risky, provocative, and very deadly strikes. So it could induce caution in our enemies across the board. It could also produce revenge. I don't think the Taliban angle is the direct thing, though. The real question here is, do they have plans for peace talks with Iran? Because they're the ones you're actually fighting with. We've just started a war or are continuing to step up our war with Iran. The question is, do they have an off-ramp because it doesn't seem likely that Iran is just going to walk back into its cave and sit there and say, sorry, no mas, no mas, after this.
Mm. Well, this morning it seems as if the president's mind is definitely on the question of impeachment. He's sent out a bunch of tweets today already, including saying Congress and the president should not be wasting their time and energy on a continuation of the totally partisan impeachment hoax when we have so many important matters pending. That's a tweet from the president. And again, he tweets, the impeachment hoax, in his words, just a continuation of the witch hunt, which started even before I won the election. It must end quickly. And he did put in an Iran tweet in there as well, the president saying Iran will never have a nuclear weapon. Anna, let me turn to you about how Congress or how Republicans are handling this moment right now, given all the profound concerns about Iran, because I'm seeing here Representative Kevin McCarthy of California, Republican, of course, just yesterday he tweeted, think of the contrast. While Democrats are trying to remove Trump, President Trump from office, the president is focused on removing terrorists from the face of the earth. So how do you think Republicans are going to try and navigate this moment to their potential advantage here?
Yeah, Republicans have an interesting position right here because on the one hand, they do want to highlight that there are more important things happening than impeachment, like this new conflict with Iran. But they also don't want to play into Democratic accusations that the reason why Trump ordered this strike is to distract from impeachment. So that's going to be a delicate balance that different Republican leaders will play different ways. It was interesting on Friday when Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell spoke on the Senate floor in his first speech of the new year. He said these are two totally separate issues. He spoke first about Iran, and then he spoke about impeachment. So you see McConnell, who's going to be the next most important actor in the impeachment drama, totally separating these. Now, that's a different calculation than Kevin McCarthy, who wants to try to win back the House. So he's trying to make House Democrats look as irresponsible as possible, which is a different calculation than what Republicans are going to be thinking in the Senate.
Mm. Well, we actually have a moment from Senator McConnell's speech in the Senate on Friday. Here's where he talked about impeachment, and he went after House Democrats hard for, in his mind, stalling on delivering the articles of impeachment to the Senate.
Mr. President, it looks like the prosecutors are getting cold feet in front of the entire country and second-guessing whether they even want to go to trial. They said impeachment was so urgent that it could not even wait for due process, but now they're content to sit on their hands. This is really comical.
Darlene Superville, it seems as if the president, as we just read all those tweets, he's still calling it the impeachment hoax and wants this whole thing to go away. But what's the view from the White House? Do they want the Senate to pick up the trial as quickly as possible?
Yeah, and the president is on record as saying that he wants a trial. Weeks ago, he was talking about having witnesses, wanting former Vice President Joe Biden, his son Hunter Biden, the alleged whistleblower. He wanted all those people called in to testify during the trial. He was looking at some sort of big kind of made-for-TV spectacle where he would be, you know, exonerated before a live audience or something to that effect, in keeping with his reality TV background. I think he's been talked down from that a little bit and is content now to allow Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to be in charge of the process and exactly what the trial would eventually look like.
Mm. And Anna, just check me on here, because I'm seeing here that there's a possibility that this week House Speaker Nancy Pelosi could decide when to transmit the articles of impeachment to the Senate, that some House Democratic leaders are meeting on Tuesday about this.
That's right. Yeah, this has been an interesting question for Pelosi because we didn't ever expect her to send the impeachment articles and start the process before the holiday break, because once those articles go over to the Senate has to start the trial immediately and has to drop all of their business. But she did kind of give in to some outside commentators by saying that this was part of the strategy. So this became not just a procedural question, but more of a strategic question. So that raises all kinds of issues about, you know, when and under what conditions she'll send the articles over. She did say she wanted to see better contours of what the Senate trial will look like so she can, for example, name the impeachment managers that will present the House's case. So House members will get back tomorrow, and she will meet with her leadership team tomorrow and then meet with the whole caucus in a regularly scheduled meeting on Wednesday. So I expect that we'll know more after she has a chance to kind of air these concerns, hear from her members, and that will happen Wednesday morning. So we could see the impeachment articles going over this week, in fact.
Interesting. Well, Gideon, I just want to hear what you think about, you know, we talked about how Mitch McConnell, Senator McConnell, wants to keep these the Iran and the impeachment issues separate. But I think, Anna, I think it was you who mentioned Representative Ro Khanna. And I see a quote here from him saying the issues are connected in his mind. He says it shows the same reckless pattern of policymaking that the president engaged in with Ukraine. And then Ro Khanna went on to say, this is from The New York Times, it's no longer a matter of standing up for the rule of law and the Constitution. It's a matter of safeguarding our national security and peace, because a president that disregards constitutional processes can pose a huge risk to stability and peace. So, I mean, Gideon, do you see these issues as connected?
So the question of McConnell's role in all this is very interesting, because he's obviously an extraordinarily powerful player during this era in Washington. And he has always been a deep institutionalist. He's obviously a master of the Senate. And he and Nancy Pelosi are engaging in a wonderful duel for the ages on congressional procedure throughout these years. But he also actually is a serious person who cares about policy and national security, I believe, deep in his heart. And so he understands a lot of the problems with this administration, while at the same time trying to keep it, carry its water politically. And so the question becomes, the Republican establishment has bet that backing Trump can give them what they want on things like taxes and judges and immigration or other policy, but not actually cause a major giant international or domestic political crisis. And this will be a test of that. And so the question is not so much the strike for Soleimani, but what happens next? If Iran retaliates, do we continue to go up the ladder? Do we go into war? Are we actually going to war? I don't think the Trump administration said, I want to go to war with Iran tomorrow. But that's a possibility that has been set in motion from their ratcheting up of pressure. Mm. And the question then becomes, if you don't want to back down and you don't want to go forward, what do you do? You know, what is the end game of the Iran policy?
You know, we had that caller earlier, the Air Force veteran from Afghanistan, saying that he referenced the Afghanistan papers, that big series from The Washington Post. That was all supposed to be about lessons supposedly learned from Afghanistan.
For a strike that was often seen at the time in retaliation for a previous strike rather than a careful, thought-out plan for the future of the country in question.
Mm. Let's go to Chris, who's calling from Tampa Bay, Florida. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi. My comment today is simply this. About the impeachment process, I would love for them to carry on the process. Let's get it over with. The president has the right to a speedy trial. I think we should give it to him. Whatever the outcome, let it be, but let these people do their jobs. Between Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell, get together, make a decision, and move forward. I, as an American, I'm personally tired of all this back and forth. I would love for them to just carry on with the business of governing and just go from there.
Well, Chris,
the strike, I think, is a distraction, sorry. And, you know, personally, I think it comes down to trust. Do the American people trust that this president is doing what's in the best interest of fellow Americans? Personally, I don't think so.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for your call. Darlene, do you have a response to Chris? He's just kind of fed up with the whole thing regarding impeachment and wants the process to move on.
Yeah, I think the president and the White House would agree with him on the need for resolving this issue in a timely fashion. You know, the White House press secretary, Stephanie Grisham, and other officials say that impeachment is taking time away from other business the president could be doing for the country and Congress, right? One of the things that is still on the table for Congress to deal with is the Senate to pass the USMCA, which is the huge trade deal between the United States, Mexico, and Canada, which the House passed at the end of the year. But Senator Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader McConnell, has said he won't take that up until impeachment is off the table. There's other issues such as prescription drug prices, which lawmakers in both houses and the president have expressed a desire to deal with. And there are other issues out there that that seem to be stalled right now until this issue is dealt with. So I think there is or would be widespread agreement with the caller.
Anna, I mean, I might be stepping out of bounds here, but I can't help it. I mean, can't we just be honest for a moment and say politicians in Washington take care of the issues they want to take care of when they want to take care of it. And this is all just a giant smokescreen. I mean, you know, hearing Mitch McConnell saying, I'm not even going to take up the USMCA until the impeachment stuff is done. And then other people say, well, nothing's happening in Congress because of the impeachment. I'm just thinking about Chris, our caller. People have every right to be fed up with this, don't they?
Yeah, and I think that Chris probably represents the viewpoint of a lot of Americans, even some Democrats. And so that's why it surprised me when Pelosi said that this was kind of part of a strategy, because I don't really see much advantage for Democrats in delaying this process. They knew when they started the impeachment inquiry that the Senate would probably vote to acquit the president. So it's not like changing the structure of a trial is going to change the outcome. And her moderate Democrats do face a political risk for this going on and on and on. And there are Senate Democrats who are running for president and are missing out on some of the early primary action by being in Washington for a Senate trial. So there are a lot of concerns. There are a lot of Americans who are fed up. And I do think that the quicker they move forward with this, they've impeached the president. They've kind of checked that box. You know, there was, you know, arguably justification for doing that. But now that they've done it, just let the process play out and, you know, kind of let the chips fall where they may.
Well, let's go back to our callers. Let's go to John, who's calling from Boonesboro, Maryland. John, you're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to know if anything realistically can be done to rein in Trump, either in terms of Iran or the impeachment. GOP seems to be falling in line, and the Democrats in the Senate don't have the numbers. What do you think?
John, thank you for your call. Gideon, you want to respond to him?
Well, I think what I said about Mitch McConnell applies, which is I think the Republican establishment has made a bargain. They may are getting more than they bargained for, but they still think the bargain is ultimately worth it until it becomes not worth it. And that's why, you know, that's why they tried to obstruct the investigation so that they wouldn't have to have evidence that would force them to confront the reality. And that's why they're trying to slow the impeachment and trial and avoid confronting it. And the question becomes, will the Iran crisis escalate to a point where the Republican establishment can no longer tolerate this as a sort of, you know, joke and essentially have to deal with the reality of the bizarre situation we have in Washington today?
But isn't lingering behind John's question there sort of this is the outcome of the creeping power of the executive that we've seen across multiple administrations, Gideon?
It is. And that's exactly the scary part of all this, which is what we've seen is that concentrated power on the presidency can be used in extraordinarily arbitrary ways, just like the concentrated power of the United States can be used in extraordinary ways. We haven't gone and killed a general of another country and then major this way since Yamamoto in World War II. What Trump has done just now is similar to what he does in domestic politics. And one of the things we're realizing is a system in which you have extraordinarily concentrated power can be used for good, but can also be used for bad. And it's a pretty scary situation. Mm. So I wonder if we're going to try and check Trump. Will other people look at this and say we need to check the United States?
Wow. Well, Darlene, we've just got about a minute left to go here. I'm going to give you the last thought for today. Where do you think you're going to be? What do you think you're going to be paying most attention to as this week unfurls ahead of us?
I don't think we can separate impeachment from what's going on in Iran. Both of those stories are going to be what the focus is on this week. We had, you know, my other panelists talking about Nancy Pelosi possibly sending over the articles of impeachment. That will start that process. And then you still have all the questions surrounding the strike on Soleimani that are going to be bubbling up, particularly as lawmakers come back into town.
Well, Darlene Superville, White House correspondent for the Associated Press, joining us from Washington. Darlene, it was great to have you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
And Anna Edgerton, national and Congress editor for Bloomberg News, also with us from Washington. Anna, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Gideon Rose, editor of Foreign Affairs Magazine and former associate director for Near East and South Asian Affairs on the staff of the National Security Council, with us from New York. Gideon, it was a great pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
On Point is produced by Anna Bauman, Justine Daum, Eileen Amada, Stefano Katsonis, James Ross, Dori Scheimer, Alex Schroeder, Grace Tatter, and Adam Waller, with help from Bradley Noble and Sydney Wertheim. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes.
Can Profit Motive save the planet? Is a company that takes the climate into account a better investment? How about one that pays workers a living wage and champions transparency and board diversity? That's the idea of ESG, or environmental social governance.
Sounds like a wonderful story. You can make more money, you can save the planet at the same time. Almost no one is going to turn that down.
It's a story that Andy King of Questrom and Veet Henish of the Wharton School challenged during a recent event at Questrom. Professor King played the critic, who says these are problems for regulation to solve, not markets.
As a famous economist said to me, you can't fix externalities with the profit motive, because the profit motive is not linked to externalities. Externalities are the byproduct of pursuing profits. So you can't fix them by getting people to even look harder at profits.
Meanwhile, Veet emphasized that ESG can be an important part of the solution.
Regulation matters, and we need better regulation. And we need to reallocate trillions of dollars of capital over time to the climate transition alone, forgetting social justice, racial justice, and other ESG issues. We're going to need the profit motive for that. No government regulation is going to reallocate tens of trillions of dollars of capital alone. It's going to be investors who are looking at current government regulation and future government regulation and trying to connect the dots.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.